she said. Yeah. Okay, we're in church. This is church. Gotta remember, it's church. I'm impressed. So I'm assuming that, yeah. And it's color-coded. I want one of those. I want one for my ducks. And I'm assuming that's not in the shot, right? Okay. Right. I didn't hear what you said. What was that? I'm working for shorter sermons. So far, so good. Really short. Say what? I know they do. I don't mind writing one. I just don't think it's hard for people to listen to them. Welcome to the Ventura Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Bonnie Rose, and it's great to have you here this morning. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Lonnie, our board president.
Good morning. It's great to start with some laughter this morning. And, oh, I always say this, but today is an extra special treat because we have our beloved Jennifer speaking. And I just encourage you out there to show her some love because I know what it's like to stand up here on this on the pulpit and have your knees shaken. So we're just so blessed to have Jennifer join us this morning. So settle in. We've got a great reading, beautiful music, and Mr. Bill. How can it get any better?
Thank you. Thanks, Lonnie. Having Bill Hadris come forward, and he is going to guide us from the wisdom of a child.
Good morning. I'm Bill Hadris with Youth and Family. And today, I'd like to start by having you relax, take a deep breath, close your eyes if you'd like, and think. Have you ever experienced any major changes in your life? Maybe a new teacher, moving to a new neighborhood, a pandemic? Think, how did you feel? Were you scared? Nervous? Resistant, perhaps? Were you able to see any good from it? Maybe new friends, a new favorite teacher, a new way to connect. So, how can we make change feel easy to accept? Bring a flashlight.
Ooh.
Right? When I go camping, it gets really dark. And I turn on my flashlight, and I may not always see where I'm going to end up, but I can focus on my next step. Having faith of God is like having a flashlight. It's knowing that whatever is at the end of our journey, we are always supported every step of the way. So change and new things in life only have to be as scary as you decide. You can choose in your own mind to accept the change and trust it will be good instead of being scared and resisting it. So I invite you to repeat after me. I choose to trust that change will be good.
I choose to trust that change will be good.
And so it is.
And so it is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. It's great. Thanks so much. Okay, so now I'm inviting another Bill, Bill Seal, who's our practitioner, and he's going to give us good morning. He's going to pray for us.
Good morning, everyone. And at this time, I would invite all the practitioners and ministers to please stand with me as we anchor this prayer this morning. I give thanks for each and every one of you here. So as we enter into this prayer, know in your hearts that God is the source of love, source of compassion, trust, forgiveness, fearlessness, truth, strength. And as I identify and relate to those same spiritual traits that God is, I recognize them within each and every one of us here today, knowing that God is the fearlessness and the strength and the courage in each and every one of us as we stand and live our lives with love, with compassion, with the knowledge that we are one with each other. The strength that bonds us is that unconditional love. As we surrender in that knowledge, we are empowered to do and bring forth the gifts that we are bearing, whether it's music, whether it's a kind word, whether it's service to the homeless. Wherever that might be, look within ourselves and see that gift that we can share with others. Today, as we listen to the words of Jennifer, I know those words are truth, and they touch our hearts and our minds to empower us and uplift us. As well as the music and the reading, I give great thanks for this spiritual center that we are a part of, how we've held together and empowered each other and loved each other this last year of change. And yes, we're still standing, we're still loving, and we're still giving, and our hearts are wide open. Thank you, God, for that knowledge. And please join me today as I release these words into the universal law, saying, and so it is.
So it is. Thank you, Bill. And let us breathe in and out, settling deeply into our center, knowing that our center is always with us, relaxing, letting go, letting love be, as we listen to the words of our sacred reading.
The Moments of My High Resolve, from The Inward Journey by Howard Thurman. Keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve. Despite the dullness and barrenness of the days that pass, if I search with due diligence, I can always find a deposit left by some former radiance. But I had forgotten. At the time, it was full-orbed, glorious and resplendent. I was sure that I would never forget. In the moment of its fullness, I was sure that it would illumine my path for all the rest of my journey. I had forgotten how easy it is to forget. There was no intent to betray what seemed so sure at the time. My response was whole, clean, authentic. But little by little, there crept into my life the dust and grit of the journey. Details, lower-level demands, all kinds of cross-currents. Nothing momentous, nothing overwhelming, nothing flagrant. Just wear and tear. If there had been some direct challenge, a clear-cut issue, I would have fought it to the end and beyond. In the quietness of this place, surrounded by the all-pervading presence of God, my heart whispers, keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve, that in fair weather or in foul, in good times or in tempests, in the days when the darkness and the foe are nameless or familiar, I may not forget that to which my life is committed. keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve. Amen.
And so we continue to breathe deeply and move into that place, that high resolve that created us, that came into being through us, and that remembers itself through us. Together, let us sing, "I am remembering who I am." And in the beauty of this divine remembrance, we breathe in deeply. And then we exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is, as it is, and so it is.
Hi, everybody. I hope you've been very well and healthy and grounded and feeling and loving. This song is called Stars Align, and I'll let it speak for itself. You go when you lost in my pain, sheets of the rain crashing down. With you, with you, with you, the stars align, burning skies to purple blue. Golden echoes of the sun laying us down, down on the ground to come undone. Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. It's beautiful. Thanks. So I'm here to introduce our guest speaker today. Many of you know her. I've known Jennifer for years now. It's hard to imagine that that we've both been here at the center as long as we have, but when I look at her grown-up kids that are like, you know, this tall now, I remember when they were this tall and so adorable, and I was just so happy when she and Bill came to the center, and I just so admire them as parents and as people. Jennifer quickly went on the practitioner track, where she dazzled all of us with her wit and her wisdom, and then went on to the School of Ministry. She is now in the School of Ministry, and she's in her last year, as I recall, and she's here today to enlighten us with her words of wisdom. Such an honor to have her speak for us today. And before I sit down, I just want to let Jennifer know that the flowers are dedicated to Jennifer Gadbury Hadras in honor of her first sermon at VCSL. Let's give Jennifer some love. Thanks. Thank you.
I would have done it for the flowers. I got happy now. Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you for inviting me to come talk today. This isn't my first talk, so you don't have to be too nervous. I have done a few other talks, but it is my first talk with the accoutrements, so this is pretty exciting for me. Really exciting to hear Hugh read the reading. Just thank you so much. It's wonderful. And a big thank you to Howard Thomas. What is his name? For the reading, because I've heard that saying, that keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve. I've heard that. It's a meme. It's on everything. It's in everything. And I like to use it. I actually use it as a mantra for my meditations. I have two that I like to use when I'm like really struggling with meditating. That is one, keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve. And my other one is, I like to say, be still and know. So depending on what's happening, I just repeat those over and over, and it calms me and soothes me. So one day, I'm using this keep fresh before me, and I'm like, what is that from anyway? You know, like, where did that come from? And then I read the whole reading, and I was like, whoa, like, so keep fresh before me. This is a beautiful prayer. But then you do the reading, and it's like, this is a lesson. This is beautiful. I need to write that down. So I file it away, and then Bonnie asked me if I would like to talk, and I was like, it's springtime, and what do I want to talk about in springtime? And I remembered this reading. So it's springtime. Yay, I love spring. I love those transition times between one season and the next. Some of us might have realized that we're also coming out of a pandemic. So we have this big transition that's happening right now. It's happening for my kids, and it's probably happening for most of us, you know, as vaccines are happening and opening. And things are opening, and Bonnie talked so beautifully about the removing of the stone and coming forth from our tombs. And in these transition times, I kind of like to reflect a little bit on what's happened before, you know, and it's also the quarter, right? So this is we're going into our second quarter of the year. And some of you might have done the New Year's Eve celebration with Linda, where we were setting intentions. Some of us might still make New Year's resolutions. I think they're kind of passé now. I still do it. But there's some people that are like, oh, you know. And then there's also the choosing your word for the year. I did all of them. I do all of them. I love doing these things. I love setting intentions. I love that feeling of like, yes, I'm going to do this. I love the going from, you know, I should do this, to I am going to do this. It feels empowering. It feels good. I write it down. I'm like, I'm doing it. And then April comes, and it's like, so how are those resolutions coming? And some of you might be with me on this, maybe not. You know, some of you might be just gangbusters. I know my husband, he drives me crazy. The pandemic hit, and he had to start working out at home, and he gets up every day, and he works out in the living room. You hear him out there. 5 in the morning, it's like, ah, what is that, you know, and he's like, look at these guns, you know, and I enjoy it, so, you know, so it's a good thing, but, you know, but he's set on it, you know, he has he sets these behaviors, and it's easy for me to see that in him. I'm sure he sets some behaviors that he maybe isn't doing as well, but I don't see those because I love him and I like to see all of the good things about him. But so taking a look at this lesson and this time of reflection, I'm looking at what I had set, and I invite everybody here, kind of think back a little bit. What were you set? What was your word? Like, my word was compassion. I like that word. It's a nice word, and I nailed it. I don't even feel like bad about saying it. I'm pretty much nailing the compassion thing. I am so good. I am blessing and loving people at the grocery store who are like pulling their mask down to cough. I'm on it. Like, I'm like, bless them. I love them. They are divine, immanent souls. I'm just like, I'm nailing the compassion thing inside. I'm like, yeah, doing that. And then some of my more mundane behaviors that I wanted to change. Every year, probably since middle school, every January, I tell myself I am going to journal. And in this center and in this teaching, journaling is part of every class. Journaling is a part of the artist's way. Journal, 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 journal. Even lately, I saw One of my behaviors that I've picked up during the pandemic is binge watching Netflix. Yeah. Committed to that one. Nailing to binge watching Netflix for the pandemic. But I was watching this British criminal procedural show, and and the cops come in and they're like, "And where were you on the April 13th of 1983?" Because it's this cold case show. And the posh people are always like, "Oh, I'll have my secretary check my diary," and then they'll do the same thing to some like kind of tough guy in jail or something, and "Where were you?" And he'll be like, "Right, I'll have my secretary check my diary," real sarcastic. And it's just like, "Oh dear, I'm just like that thug in prison." Because if you ask me to check a journal that isn't January 1st through about January 20th, I don't have journal entries. Like, I have, "Dear diary, this is going to be the best year ever, January 1st and 2nd, and then by the 10th, it's like, oh, okay, and then March 3rd, oh, I was going to keep this, but, some stuff has happened, and then January 1st, dear diary, this is going to be the best year." And so that's kind of how I've been rolling with journaling, and I realized when I was looking at this, like, why do I do that? And maybe journaling is, maybe you're really good at it. I have lots of friends who are amazing at journaling. But maybe there's some other behavior that you want to change and that you were thinking like, "This is it, I'm going to do this." And you realize like the reading, the grit, and the dirt kind of gums up the works and stops you from doing it. And sometimes it's simple stuff like that, and you just need to kind of go, "Oh," and you just need a little goosing. You need a little, in your meditation, "Hold forth before me," hold, and you're like, "Oh yeah, I was going to do that," and you can go do it. And then sometimes you're like, yeah. And then that's what I look at the, if you're lucky enough, sometimes you get up from that meditation and you're like, "Oh yeah, I was going to do that. Oh, look. There's this over here, there's some Netflix to watch, or there's some dinner to cook, or there's something else that isn't that one thing that you promised yourself that you were going to do." And I don't have any like grand notions like that my journaling is going to, inform the masses. It's for me. It's to help me. It's something I would do for myself. Maybe yours is exercise. Maybe yours is eating right. But it's for you. But it's something that you just put aside. So what I was realizing is that when you have those moments and you're like, "Why do I do that?" You can think of that in the pink voice. "Why do I do that?" I realize that's those cross currents. Those are those invisible things in your life that kind of just sweep across you and just say, "Not today." And they're not this confrontational thing. You don't have somebody like, "You shouldn't do this." Because like he says, you would be like, "No." You can tell if that person they're wrong. But it's just these invisible things that kind of push you off course. And if you allow them, will keep you off course. So if you're lucky enough to realize it, and lucky enough to go, "What is this cross current?" You're lucky enough to really start looking at it. And I'm going to propose that I believe that those cross currents are your beliefs. They're those rooted beliefs that you have in you, that you have held fast to. There are your structure, your belief. However many 14 years ago when I started here, if you had asked me about beliefs, I would have been like, "Well, yeah, my beliefs, my core beliefs. Those are. That's what makes me me. That's what's important, right? That's like my virtues or my beliefs." But I was thinking about this, and so I looked it up. In the Science of Mind textbook, in the glossary, I always like definitions. They work well for me. But I'm not going to read it out of there because the type is too small. So I printed it out. Look at me all prepared. Belief is the conviction or feeling of the truth of a proposition or condition. Belief may go no farther than intellectual assent, while faith embodies a trust and confidence. Belief admits all degrees from the slightest suspicion to the fullest assurance. Easy for Ernest to say, right? So, and I'm like, Well, that's good news, right? It's completely counter to what I've always believed. I have always believed that my beliefs were what makes me me. But according to Ernest here, beliefs are from the slightest suspicion to the fullest assurance. Beliefs are something that is malleable and changeable. That means that we can change our beliefs. In a lot of centers for spiritual living, if I say, change your thinking, I can get the whole crowd to yell back at me, change your life. Change your thinking, change your life. Right? And so when I heard that the first time, I'm like, that feels good. I can change my life just by changing my thinking. And I'm a good thinker, so that means that I am going to just nail this change in my life because I can think better than most people, I believe. So turned out that changing my thinking was just another behavior that I was really good at failing at. Like, oh, there I fall down again. And it was like, so if you read farther than just the soundbite, kind of like the reading today, if you read farther than the soundbite, you realize that Ernest Holmes has this catchy phrase, but what he really means is that you need to kind of find those beliefs, that you need to change those beliefs to change the thinking, to change your life. Like, but that doesn't make a catchy meme, right? That doesn't make a catchy title on your book. So how are we going to do this? How am I going to do this? I need to change my beliefs. And again, Miss Brain here. I'm an engineer my day job is engineering, and so I'm like, let's analyze this. And Ernest has a definition for analyzing too. This one's a little long, and so just I don't read as beautifully. So here we go. To analyze anything is to resolve it into its constituent parts or elements. Self-analysis is the act of analyzing oneself. Look into your own past and find out what you are afraid of and convince the mentality that there is nothing to fear. Look the world squarely in the face. I love this part. Sift the mentality down to its depths, removing every obstruction that inhibits the free flow of those great spiritual realizations, which we have talked about from time to time in this book. Again, awesome, right? I love that. Easy for Ernest to say. So, I'm looking this world squarely in the face, and I'm going to sift the mentality to its depths, removing every obstruction that inhibits the free flow of spiritual realizations. All right, so, here I go. I've been lucky enough several times over my life and over being a practitioner to start falling asleep and not be able to sleep because my brain is grinding. Oh, it's got something in there. It's got some grit, and it's just grinding in there. It's like, or sometimes in really, really good days, I wake up at 3 a.m. with my brain going, and I'm like, oh, come on, no, this is sleeping time. And the brain's like, no, you are quiet, and now you can hear me. Oh, damn. So here goes my brain. And I'm like, okay, well, Ernest says, I can analyze my thoughts. I can analyze this stuff. I'm going to analyze this. Okay, brain, I'm semi-awake. Let me have it. And the Greek chorus of a committee, like, comes up and starts yelling at me, like, oh. And I'm like, oh, I'm analyzing this. Oh, I got to analyze this, and I can't. So I'm going to give everybody, if you're lucky enough to have this happen to you, and if you're not lucky enough, I'm really sorry if you're sleeping through the night without any of these problems. I'm so sorry. You can talk to Bill later, you know, because he sleeps pretty soundly. I can usually hear him snoring when this stuff is happening to me. So you can go, all right, brain, all right. Quiet. Now, don't do what I sometimes do. Shut up, brain. It's time to go to sleep. That works sometimes, but not usually. Just shut up. Sometime recently, this past year, I tried that. Shut up, brain. I'm going to sleep. And my brain was like, so much for that compassion. Damn it. So, I thought, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? Sit down. Sit down. Don't shut up yet. Just sit down. Sit down. Take a seat. We're going to have some parameters. We're going to do some parameters to this analyzing because it makes it easier for me to do things this way. So sit down. Here are the parameters, all you little monkeys. We're going to go one at a time. And we are going to invite our divine self into this conversation. Now, the divine self, you don't realize sometimes, is always there. The divine self is that part of you that is that part with God or with spirit or with universe. It is that part of you that informs who you are. It is the part that has never known anything other than love. And has the part of you that has never known anything but God. That divine self. So the parameters are we're going to sit. We're going to go one at a time. We're going to have divine self in on this conversation. So we've got divine self here. I anthropomorphize my divine self as like a big earth mama, you know. She's like, she hugs everybody when she comes in. Like, oh, you're so cute. I love all of you. And she sits down. And she says, thank you for giving me a chair. Because usually she's just kind of, you know, keeping the lights on in the place. So, you know, cooking. She's doing all the important stuff. And letting the committee just think they're doing the important stuff. So she comes in. And then I think, how are we going to do this? How are we going to, you know, have each person heard? And then I remembered Byron Katie. I came to a Byron Katie seminar here years ago. She spoke here. And she is amazing. She has some amazing work. She has some really amazing books. So I heard Byron Katie here, and I got really excited, and I bought her book. And all of her books have these great pictures of her on them, and I bought it. And I took it home, and I read, like, the first two chapters, and then I didn't read it. I actually had to dig this one out from underneath my bed. And then, I mean, the gist of Byron Katie, you know, everybody knows it, right? But what I remember is I also bought this book by Byron Katie. And I'll let everybody know I finished this one. I made it through. I finished this one in, like, record time. I was like, I'm nailing this one. I've used this one. I use this one with my kids. So for those of here, it's called Tiger, Tiger, Is It True? And it's by Byron Katie and Hans Wilhelm. I like saying his name. So, and in this book, you know, Tiger has some problems. He wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. He has some problems with his parents. You know, he's kind of like just having a bad day. And he's just, you know, he's kicking stones and he's just having a bad day. And he meets Mr. Turtle. It's always a turtle in kids' books. Like, have you ever noticed, like, if you really need some, like, wisdom advice, you go to a turtle? It's always a turtle. You know, I've learned a few things by these kids' books, and it's like, I need to get me a turtle. So he goes to the turtle, and the turtle does Byron Katie's work with this little tiger. Is it true? And that's the question, and that's the tool. That's the tool she teaches, that's the tool in here. Is it true? And I love this tool. Like all good tools, you can use it for almost anything. It's like the butter knife of spirituality, you know. So you can use this externally. Tiger, Tiger uses Is It True externally. He uses it to analyze things that are happening with his parents and with his friends and with his teachers and with himself. He's able to do that. But I realize I can use this tool with myself too and my committee. And this is how we're gonna deal with this committee. Is it true? That's all you have to ask. And the divine self loves that. Actually, you want to read this? No? Okay. She's like, I don't know, this sounds like some spiritual lesson in there. It doesn't sound like a fun book at all. But so like the spiritual butter knife it is, it works not only to spread your peanut butter, it works as a screwdriver, it works as a hammer, you know. You can bonk those people. No, we're doing compassion. We're not bonking our thoughts on the head anymore. So you get your committee, and your committee starts one at a time saying what you're doing that is so bad, where you're failing. You know, you didn't journal. You're right. Why do you think I didn't journal? Or somebody else on the committee who wants to stick up for you. She didn't journal because she didn't have the time. Well, she had time for that Netflix. Yeah, but, you know, she was almost done with the series. But she could have done it before she got to bed. Yeah, but she's really tired. Yeah, because she watched the stupid Netflix. So it goes back and forth. And we're like, time out. we're spiritual. We're spiritual. We're religious scientists. What's the truth? What's the belief behind this? And for me, my little own special truth, because I've done all sorts of things for the journaling. Like I bought like really fancy journals, and it boils down to a few things. I don't want to write in the fancy journal because it's fancy and it's pretty, and I don't want to make it messy because my handwriting's ugly. Or sometimes, there was nothing to journal. I don't remember my dreams. I don't have anything important to say. And all of this boils down to, I'm not worthy. I didn't think I was going to make myself cry. But it hurts. It hurts to say it out loud, and it hurts to feel it, and it hurts to believe it. And that's when your divine self goes, finally, thank you. And your divine self looks at your committee and says, thank you. Thank every single one of you for helping her come to this realization. Thank you, all of you, for finally helping her see where she is holding this belief that she thought she got rid of because she is a divine emanation of God. We say that here all the time. I'll say that for you when you call in prayer, and I'll know it for you, and then I'll turn around and I will forget it for myself. That belief, that is so rooted that you have to pull it out and pull it out and pull it out and pull it out. And it's probably, it gets cross-currented and it gets covered up. And sometimes it pops up unexpectedly. And when it does, you have this gift of this self-talk so that you can shine light on it again. And that's the gift. That's the thing. So your divine self in the is this true? I'm not worthy. My divine self goes, is that true? Tiger, is that true? No, it's not true. I know it's not true. Do you? If I say yes, can I go to sleep? And your divine self says, you can go to sleep whenever you want. But do you want to go to sleep? Or do you want to awaken to what you really are? Yes. Sometimes it's yes. Sometimes it's like, sure. And sometimes it's like, yes. And my divine self at that moment says, okay. Thank you. Thank you to the committee. Thank you to the brain for playing. Before we go to sleep, let's think about what is true. This is the fun part. This is the part where I kind of like, yeah. Let's think about what's true. The divine self takes the whole committee and hugs them to herself and says, all right, everybody, let's think. What is truth? Truth with a capital T. Truth that doesn't need a committee to defend it. Because when you need a committee to say, and give examples and give evidence against you and give this and give that, and it's defending these beliefs, those aren't truth. What is really true? Truth, capital T. No defense necessary. Let's just, what is really true? In that moment, I can know that the truth is that when I stand on the beach with my beloved, my Mr. Perfect, and I'm holding his hand, and I'm feeling that cold sand in my feet, and I'm watching the sunset, and I'm watching the water, and I'm smelling the sea air, and I'm watching the birds, and I know that that is God, and I know that God is right there with me, and I can know it so beautifully. That's capital T truth. When I close my eyes and I remember when my 6-foot-plus-tall three boys, when I remember when they were babies, little three-month-old babies with their little soft faces and their little breathing when they were sleeping, I know that that love I felt for them was true. When Hugh does a reading and I can't stop crying, I know that's true. When Tom sings his song and I'm like, oh boy, how am I going to follow that? That's true. When my heart swells with love and gratitude right in that moment, that's true. And when I get myself really worked up like that, I realize that not only is that true, and not only is God in those moments, but God is also in my feet that are freezing on the beach and start hurting and make me walk back away from the beach and go into the car and go back to home to go eat dinner. that God is there too, and that's true, and that's love, and it's beautiful. And I know that God is in that 6-foot-tall, 6'2", sorry, didn't get that right, 16-year-old that can't see his shoes in the hallway, you know, that I'm tripping over, and smells like a locker room. I know that God is in him, and that is true. And I know, and I know, and I know, and I know in that moment that God is in me, and that I am divinely appointed, and I am not, I don't need to say it braggadociously, I don't need to say it quietly, because it doesn't need defending, it doesn't need to be screamed out. I can just know it and know that God is in me, and then that's true. And when I know that for myself, I know it for every single person in here, all few of you, and everybody out there in Facebook and on YouTube, that that's true too. So, if you find yourself lucky enough to have diminished your moments of high resolve, if you find yourself lucky enough to have that your committee turn into a Greek chorus of terror, I invite you to take a breath, invite your own divine self into the committee meeting, and say, let's work on what's true, and let's find that together. And so it is. I get Chris playing for me while I pray. Not just in my head like when I'm at home. Oh, taking a deep breath in. Something Chris didn't know before is that he is always with me playing piano. He accompanies me whenever I'm in the world. And I just invite everybody, close your eyes. Knowing that God is in this moment, right here and right now. God is with us in this sanctuary and outside of this sanctuary. God is everywhere, in everything, as everything. That one divine presence, unifying each single one of us together in beauty and love and community and joy. I know I can speak this word as one with everybody. I know that this time together has been blessed. I know that everybody that has said yes to Sunday morning with VCSL, or sometimes even later in the week, that they are blessed by this one presence, this one infinite intelligence. All of life, every single thing is a blessing. And we open our hearts to accept that blessing. We open our hearts to keep that divine truth foremost in our hearts and our minds and in our lives. I'm so grateful to know this truth. So grateful for everyone who said yes. So grateful for God. And I release my word into the infinite and universal law. And so it is.